Hi, everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Moyen, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm joined by humanitarian Marion Donvan. She's a mom of three. She's actually Luxembourgish, and she is the manager of the beloved Lebanese restaurant Sheesh. If you don't know, Sheesh is a Lebanese/Syrian restaurant that is run almost entirely by refugees. I think she's got something like 70 employees working at soon to be 7 restaurants across the country. She's got a really incredible story. She actually started her career as a steel trader and found herself as a single mom and decided to go for it and apply to every NGO under the sun. I won't spoil her whole story. You're going to have to listen. I hope you like it. And as always, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. My email is momlife@rtltoday.lu. And you can find me on social media at momlife in Luxembourg. Merci Filmus, and enjoy the show. Hi, Marianne. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. You are such a, juggernaut in the community, I would say. So normally I start with, tell me your Luxembourgish story. Why are you here? How did you get here? How's it going? But you are actually Luxembourgish. So I would love to hear about where you are now. Give me the broad strokes. Everybody knows Sheesh. So you're the owner of Sheesh, the restaurant.
The manager, yes.
The manager. Mm-hmm. And there are 3 locations, I believe.
6 and soon 7.
Oh, 6 and soon 7. Okay. So from the kind of new to Luxembourg scene, I think pretty much everybody knows of Sheesh. It serves delicious Lebanese food and that it's run by refugees, but that's it. So tell me kind of broad strokes where you are now, and then I want to talk about how you got there.
Yes. So now I'm running the 6 or soon 7 Sheesh restaurants. We have 70 employees.
Wow.
Which means that there's a lot of work. I guess I'm at Sheesh from 9 in the morning until we close. So it's a long days, but it doesn't feel like working. It's an adventure for me. And I'm very lucky to have also, in addition to all my employees, many other refugees and migrants coming to my office the whole day long. So I get to know lots of things happening in Luxembourg with asylum seekers, and I'm trying to help them as I can. Yeah.
Where are the 6, soon to be 7 restaurants? And are they all called Sheesh?
They're all called Sheesh, more or less, because, I mean, there's the one in Limpertsberg, the first one. Then we opened in Esch in 2020, then in Le Delange in 2021. Then we opened in Bonnevoie, opposite of Rotonde. And this year we took over the Moudam Café.
Oh, cool.
So inside the museum, yes. And on the 1st of July, we opened in Bettange-sur-Metz. It's in the commune of Depach. And we are about to open in Edelbruck. It will open on the 1st of January next year.
Wow, congratulations. Thank you. I'm not sure if this is coming out before or after the 1st of January. We'll have to work that out. But do all the restaurants have the same menu?
We serve Syrian Lebanese food in all these places, but there are some differences. For example, in Bettange, the mayor wasn't sure people in Bettange would want Syrian food.
Okay.
And it sounded too exotic to her. And so we compromised. We said, okay, we do the menu half Luxembourgish, half Syrian Lebanese. But now we can see that we sell much more Syrian Lebanese than Luxembourgish food, because she was not exactly right, because many people like to find out and try new things. And there's many expats also living around. They all know us and come to us to eat Syrian Lebanese. And at the Moudam, we also have a brunch menu on Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays. So that's not Lebanese. That's omelette and avocado toast and whatever you are accustomed to use to eating for brunch.
Yeah?
So
oh.
Yes, we adapt to the location.
Okay, yeah. So that's a big deal, because I'm always looking for a good brunch spot on the weekends. Would you say it's kid-friendly?
It is, yes, 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 no problem. And Sheesh in Limpertsberg as well is very kid-friendly, yeah.
Yes, the restaurants, yeah. But the museum.
I mean, there's a lot of space at the Moudam Café, so we have lots of kids coming, running around. I think that's not a problem.
Yes. Okay, great.
We have kids' parties even, kids' birthdays, yes.
Wow,
yes,
and yes. Open on a Sunday?
Open on a Sunday, okay. And open on holidays, yes.
Wow, okay, all I need to know. I'll see you soon. Do you differentiate between Lebanese food and Syrian food?
It is actually Syrian food because the chef's from Syria.
Okay.
But nobody knows what Syrian food means. So that's why we decided to call it Lebanese food, because then this sounds about, most people know what Lebanese food is because there's many Lebanese restaurants around the world. Yes, but that's not exactly correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I won't tell my half Lebanese husband. Yeah. And you also serve Ukrainian food, I saw on the menu. Is that new?
Yes, it's not new. It's for more than 2 years since we have started hiring Ukrainian women. Meanwhile, we have hired 10 Ukrainian women in our team. They cook the Ukrainian menu. And also for each Ukrainian dish we sell, we donate €1 to
Amazing. Okay, so you have this vast restaurant empire. I mean, for Luxembourg, almost 7 restaurants, that's huge, right? You have this vast kind of restaurant empire, but you really use it as a springboard to employ refugees. So my question was, are you passionate about food or is it a means to an end?
For me, it's a means to an end. I am much more interested in the social project than, I want people to be happy when they come and to enjoy the food. But I do everything in this restaurant but cooking. I'm not a food expert. So for that, we have the chefs. But what really motivates me is to offer a job to somebody who needs to work. And for many people, that's the key to their integration. Yeah.
And you said you have 70 employees.
Yes, we now have 70 employees from more than 20 countries.
Wow.
First, maybe among the 70 employees, about half of them have refugee status. So they received international protection and they have the same rights as any Luxembourg resident. So they can sign a work contract without asking anybody. The other half was not lucky to be recognized as a refugee. So they did not get the refugee papers. And then in some instances, especially if people stay in Luxembourg for many years with kids at school or they come from countries where they cannot be sent back, then it's possible to get papers through the job. Like any person coming to work with Amazon or with big companies in Luxembourg because they have special profile. And so half of our employees have papers as a worker in Luxembourg, but thanks to the job at Shish. And that's what I'm very much motivated to do, is to help people become legal, have legal papers, and then get out of all this uncertainty and all this struggle and be able to build their life in Luxembourg.
Yeah, that's amazing work. We might have to send you to my country. This is not a political show, but just saying. How did you get here? Because we chatted a little bit before the show, and you started out as a steel trader for art. I can never say, I'm sorry, steel people, ArcelorMittal. From that steel trader corporate and steel, which maybe isn't that good for the environment, right? To humanitarian, working with refugees with a passion about giving people legal status in Luxembourg. That's quite the career arc. So tell me that story.
It actually makes a lot of sense, this story, because I was very lucky to get this job as a steel trader right after university. And I started in 1990.
I got to ask you, did you want to be a steel trader or was it like a safe job that you needed money? Were you passionate about it?
I studied actually languages and international business. That's a specific curriculum in France, langues étrangères appliquées au commerce extérieur. And I specialized in international business. And so I had to do an internship at the end of my studies. And I did this internship. At the time, it was still called Arbet, which is today ArcelorMittal. And because that was exactly at the time when Eastern Europe started opening up, they immediately wanted to hire me because they needed people to help them discover the steel industry in Czechoslovakia, Poland, former Eastern Germany, Romania, Bulgaria. Things happen in my life. So that's the way it goes. And then I was actually planning to return to university to continue studying, but I said, okay, I work for a year, see what it brings. But then, of course, I never stopped working again. So I started being in charge of purchasing steel in Czechoslovakia at the time. And that's when I first discovered that I was very lucky to be born in Luxembourg, because that's when I saw empty shops, grey streets, a lot of pollution, people oppressed, and so on. So that's why I first opened my eyes, thought that, wow, you have a chance of being born in one country or another.
Just the luck of the draw.
Exactly. And then I also got to travel a lot, not only on the purchasing side in Eastern Europe, but also on the sales side in Asia. So I got to travel to Taiwan and Thailand and the Philippines, where our customers were sitting. And that's where I also started seeing many things.
Inequalities.
A lot of inequality, a lot of poverty. And I got more and more interested in that part of the world. And at the time, I also joined in my commune. There was a Climate Alliance Commission.
Wow, back then.
Back then.
Good for you.
And so I was more and more interested in topics related to developing countries and so on. But I had to continue my job. So I was a steel trader for 10 years. And then quit because I had to travel too much. I was on the road half of the time. I had a senator card. Well, I had three little kids at home, so it was not compatible.
You had a what?
I was traveling with the senator card. I could go into all these fancy lounges because I was traveling so much. And the last 3 years I was doing this, I had three kids in a row. And then I thought, no, like, you can't do it all. So I started to think about what to do. And then my husband had opened a new company, so I joined his company. But unfortunately, 4 years after that, we got divorced. So then I was jobless. And then I thought, now or never. I sent my CV to all the Luxembourg NGOs and to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to the Development Cooperation Department. I didn't think I had any chance because I had no training or anything, no experience in this field. But I got a phone call from the former minister saying the tsunami happened in Southeast Asia. We have the EU presidency. We are overwhelmed with work. We need somebody to take care of the extraordinary budget that was just voted by Parliament to help the tsunami affected countries. And wow. Can you fly to Colombo on Thursday?
Wow.
And so it was very lucky.
Okay, yeah. I have to stop you there. How old are your kids at this point?
At that point, my kids, that was in 2005, were between 6 and 9. Yeah.
Three kids between 6 and 9. I salute you. I have three kids too. It's tough. Did you feel like, I get it, this was like a Hail Mary, like it's probably not going to happen. Were you also applying for regular corporate jobs? Because now you're a single mom. Don't you feel the pressure to provide and get a non-NGO job probably?
NGOs in Luxembourg, some of the big NGOs have similar contracts than corporate company.
Okay.
I mean, if you work for Red Cross or for Caritas at the time, that's a well-paid job.
Okay.
But working for the ministry, of course, that was beyond my expectation. That's, of course, even better. I couldn't say no. I was ready immediately. I went to sign the same day. So.
And now we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Lisa Burke, and I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome you to The Lisa Burke Show, your go-to place for eclectic conversations that really matter, the kind that make you think, feel, and hopefully leave you a little bit more inspired. Every week, I'll be chatting with some truly incredible guests, experts, everyday heroes, and maybe even sharing a little of what's going on in my own life. I'm all about finding stories that move me, unpacking everything from the latest trends to the deeper human issues that shape how we connect and live. So grab your coffee, get comfy, or take your dog for a walk and hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And don't forget, you can watch the full episodes on RTL Play and listen every week on Today Radio, The Lisa Burke Show, where we explore life in Luxembourg and beyond.
If you're enjoying Mom Life, you might also enjoy Today Radio's Office Hours with me, Adam Peterson. It is the show where we answer everyday questions about life and work in Luxembourg by talking to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts. We have many mom-friendly topics on the show. The merits of hybrid working, how to choose a gym, and how performance is managed in different industries. In the same way dads are welcome on Mom Life, you don't have to work in an office to enjoy Office Hours. Get Office Hours wherever you get your episodes of Mom Life.
Was there a specific job that you applied for, or did you just put your resume in with the ministry?
I just put my resume in. I said I was very much interested in developing countries, that I had had the chance, even through my former job, to travel a lot. And that's what really triggered the minister, because he needed somebody who was independent, who was used to traveling, and who could manage budgets. And in the steel industry, I was negotiating contracts worth millions. So somehow he trusted in my capacity to manage this budget on my own, because they were so busy with other things.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on the you being qualified, and that's an amazing win for you. It's just hard to imagine you've got your resume and your cover letter, and you're going in the front door at this huge bureaucratic office, and that they called you. So yeah. Was it networking? Did you have some friends of friends?
I was at the same secondary school, the Athénée de Luxembourg, at the same time, just a few years behind of the minister. So we knew each other, but I hadn't seen him in many years. I don't know if that played a role, but things happen in my life, as I said. I mean, I could have been afraid and not grab the opportunity.
But you signed that day.
I signed the same day, yes.
So you were in charge of the budget for the tsunami, the aid.
Yes, and then I started traveling to Sri Lanka, India, Indonesia, and I saw horrible things. It really affected me also as a person a lot, because it changed my understanding of nature, because I realized the power of nature.
You mean like a tsunami?
It's incredible. I mean, I saw huge ships in the middle of a city, and yeah, I mean, devastation to a point that I had never imagined could happen through water. And so it was an experience. And I mean, that's when I started really getting interested in how you can help people recover from such a situation, and how you can best support them to become self-reliant again after. And so that was the beginning of 11 years of humanitarian work that were very interesting for me.
At the ministry.
Yeah.
So did you have freedom to say, look, I've gone, I've seen all this devastation, this is what I think we can do to get them back on their feet again? And is that mostly through jobs, job creation?
No, that was in the beginning, at least, a lot about rebuilding schools, rebuilding houses, rebuilding hospitals, helping people get back on their feet, like providing fishermen with new boats. I mean, not creating new jobs, but helping those who had lost everything recover what they had. But in a way that if ever something happened again, it wouldn't be as devastating. So rebuilding schools and hospitals that would be more stronger.
Did you just feel so proud of yourself for that whole 10-year stretch? I mean, you were literally making the world a better place.
I think you have to always stay humble, because there's so much to do, whatever you do. And it was not with my money, it was with tax money in the name of the Luxembourg government. It's still only a drop in the large ocean, because there's a lot to do. But of course, each person you could see that you improved the person's life, or you allowed kids to go back to school and so on, that was always a very nice experience. Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can only control your little sphere. But if everybody did their drop, then that would be the ocean, right?
For sure. Yes. Exactly.
So you finished up at the Ministry of Finance?
No, that's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And there is one directorate in this ministry that's called the Directorate for Development Cooperation and Humanitarian Affairs. And that's where I was working. So I followed all these crises, also the war in Syria, what was happening in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in many African countries. So I was supposed to be on top of all the crises in the world all the time, so as to be able to react as soon as something was really getting worse, or where people needed help, to propose to the minister what we could do with our money to help save lives or improve people's lives in difficult situations. And that's the reason why, when all the people arrived in Europe and in Luxembourg in 2015, that's the reason why I wanted to meet them, because I knew why they had left their country. And that's how the new story starts. And so first I became a volunteer at the Red Cross.
Had you quit your job then?
Not yet. Okay. I'm never good at taking days off. So I had
a holiday?
Lots of holidays to take. So I agreed with my superior that I could be a volunteer and just take many days off, but still make sure that the humanitarian desk was still functioning properly. And while I was then volunteering at the Red Cross, the idea came up to launch a new project called I actually even helped in the process of hiring the right person to implement the project.
You have to explain what Hariko is.
Yes. Hariko was a project run by the Red Cross in an abandoned building. It was a very big, almost industrial building that the owner didn't use anymore. And so we put 22 artists in the building. They had their workspace there, but they didn't have to pay rent. And in return, they offered workshops. So we offered workshops for dancing, music, graffiti, many different types of workshops. We also started offering language classes. And it became, I always say, like a microcosm. I don't know if this word exists in English.
Microcosm, yeah, that's a word.
It was a very interesting place where many people met from all around the world. And yes, that's where I actually met most of the refugees who arrived in Luxembourg during these years, because they all passed through Hariko.
So if you were or are an artist or maybe a language instructor, but let's just go with artists for this example, you get a free studio space for you to go and do your craft. But in return, you're paying it forward and you're teaching others.
Exactly.
And at the time it was all refugees, but now anyone can go.
Exactly.
And how did all the refugees know about this?
I went to all the camps to pick up all the young people because I thought it was better for them to come to Hariko to express themselves instead of sitting on their bed doing nothing or bumming around the gare or the train station or somewhere. We worked together with all the camps to send the young people to Hariko to have something to do, because at that time so many young people arrived at the same time that it was very difficult to get them all to school immediately. So sometimes it took 6 or 8 months for them to be able to attend a class.
Oh, wow. And so they're just sitting around.
Yes.
Yeah. How many camps are there? And I apologize for my ignorance, but how do refugees make their way to Luxembourg? This is kind of a landlocked country.
Yes. They all have to come
on a boat.
Yeah. Most of them on a boat, some with falsified papers by plane. There's many ways of coming to Europe. Many come from Greece or from Spain or from Italy.
And they just work their way here.
Some arrive here by chance. They don't even know where they have landed. Some are brought here by human traffickers, dropped here from a van or bus or, yeah.
It just must be so scary to go through all that. No one's, I think I just want to pick up and leave my home, except for people like me.
No, I don't think anybody leaves their home for no good reason, yes.
Well, sure. We left for a better opportunity.
Yes, that's also a reason, yes.
What do you say to people who don't want refugees in the country?
Well, there's many things to say. First of all, especially for Europeans, during the Second World War, many Europeans had to flee and were very happy to be welcomed somewhere where they could be safe. So people forget very fast. Then it can always happen again that there might be a war and that we also have to flee, or climate change. You don't know what will happen. Things can get worse over the next years. There might be regions where you can't live anymore, so you need to take your stuff and go. You never know what can happen in life. Welcome those who come, because there's a reason why they left.
Right.
And especially those coming from war-affected countries. I mean, it's their right to flee. We have the Geneva Convention that we have ratified. Asylum is a right, so... Yes. And at the same time, Europe is an aging continent. We need a lot of workforce from abroad. Why don't we welcome these people, give them a proper training and integrate them into our countries? Because we need also their workforce. So it's an opportunity if we do it correctly. Yes.
That's a really interesting narrative. And I mean, I'm with you on the points, but there's going to be a big illegal immigrant haul out in the States coming up, or Trump has said so. That's what you hear in the media.
Yes, but that's political games. I mean, if you look at the figures exactly, the percentage of migrants arriving in Europe, it's a wrong debate. It's nothing. We should easily be able to integrate these people into our economies. This is political manipulation of people, and that's very horrible. I went to an event in Germany a few weeks ago where the German politicians were discussing among themselves, especially those a little bit older. They had never dreamed, after all they did to build up the German democracy, that there would be a right-wing party coming up again during their lifetime. It's very difficult to understand how in a country that has the history of Germany, people can start finding a scapegoat again, trying to now blame everything on the refugees the way they did before on the Jewish population. So it's something that happens again. And it's very difficult to understand how people can forget so fast. Yeah.
It is wild. Yes. You'd think just by reading some history, you would know what was not the good path to go down. But
exactly.
Here we are again with a bunch of rise of authoritarianisms.
Yeah. I want to fight against such thinking. And I believe that Shish is also contributing to this with the thousands of customers who come to Shish every week, seeing how nice and friendly our waiters are, how hardworking our employees are. I think it can contribute to public opinion, to show people that refugees are not this threatening mass coming to Europe to invade us. But it's always a human being with a story, with a hard life behind them, and who really want to make it and to contribute to our society. So, yeah, that's what I wish to be able to do, to convince people that we should look at it very positively.
Besides eating it, how can someone who doesn't speak any of the three official languages get involved and help out?
Well, there's many ways. So I am still looking for volunteers who help me find jobs for all the people who come and drop their CV at Shish. I mean, there's about 10 people per day who come and want to work at Shish, because all the social offices, all the NGOs working with refugees send all their beneficiaries to Shish. I can't hire the whole world. Yeah. I have 70 employees. That's as much as we can handle right now. But I have already 2 volunteers who helped me find jobs for these people, because on their own it's very difficult. If your name is Mohammed and you send your CV, nobody's even looking at it. So you need somebody who's calling behind, who says, oh, give a chance to this wonderful person, give them an interview. I know this person, he's very motivated, and so on. And it works, because together with these volunteers, we have found jobs for hundreds of people in the last years.
Does that work in English? I feel like that's a French thing.
No, some of the refugees arriving speak only English, and some speak French.
I'm talking about the volunteers.
They can contact the English-speaking companies. There's also many, like Amazon and others. There's many companies also who are more English-speaking than French-speaking.
Okay.
I mean, that's one possibility. Then I also have this NGO called Open Home. I'm still looking for families willing to welcome, especially young refugees, at home.
How old is young?
Cannot be minors, because minors, now that this legal framework now exists, if you want to welcome an unaccompanied minor in your family, you have to first become a foster family.
How hard is that?
That's 52 hours of training, and you have to go through some psychological tests and so on. They, of course, need to find out if you are a stable family that can welcome somebody at home. But from 18 years and up, you don't need to do any training. You can, if you want to take an 18-year-old refugee who's still going to school or is doing his apprenticeship, you just need to have a room in your house and be open-minded and interested in getting to know a new culture, then that's possible.
What's the gender split that you see in Luxembourg between men and women? Well, let's just say 18 to 24 refugees.
There's many more young men, for sure, because it's so difficult to come to Europe. It's so dangerous to come to Europe that many more men can make it. And then, unfortunately, many women are badly treated on the way. We have a special women's camp also. Some arrive being pregnant. Oh. Difficult stories, yes. But I mean, there's also young women. I've found families also for lots of young women who arrive alone. Also exists, yes.
Anyone can take in a refugee if they're over 18. If you want to support someone under 18, you need to become a foster family.
Exactly, yes.
Any other ways that people can help out?
Of course, at Shish, you can also help, because, and that is very nice, many customers bring especially when they move out of Luxembourg, for example, they bring all their plates and their cutlery, and they bring their carpets, and they bring whatever they don't want to take home. Uh-huh. And we work only with second-hand stuff. In Shish, there is no plate like the other. I mean, we have all very different plates and cutlery and glasses, and they are from mostly donated by our customers.
Wow.
Yes.
You know what's so funny is I've definitely noticed there's a lot of rugs in the one in Limpersburg, but I have never noticed that the cutlery and the plates don't match.
Yeah, they don't match at all. And it's very funny because some customers, when they call to reserve, they say, we come to eat at our table because we also get donations, tables and chairs. And right now we're quite full, but for each new restaurant we open, we make a call for donations on Facebook, and then we get everything we needed to, for example, to open the last two restaurants in Le Delange and Betange. We didn't spend a single cent.
Wow.
We got everything from our customers.
Is there anything else that you would like the community of people who are like me, who have been here for a few years and just trying to navigate their way around Luxembourg, to know?
Well, I mean, to come to Shish, that's for sure. I think it's an experience. Also, we have many groups coming. And what's so nice about Shish is that you get this formula called a table full of food. It's a moment of sharing because you share lots of little dishes.
The meza.
Yes, that's what most groups order because, yes, it's a very nice way of sharing and of discovering the Syrian Lebanese kitchen. I always say the world comes together at Shish. Not only from the employee perspective, but also from the customer's perspective. It's very nice, yes.
Oh, that's great. And Lebanese food is delicious, I have to say. Marianne, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me.